You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Mark Delder from Newsroom this morning. Kia ora, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thanks. There's been a lot of, policy that's come out since we last spoke with you from all the parties, but we're going to talk about Labor and National this morning. Let's start chronologically with National's tax policy, which came out a couple of weeks ago. What's been the main takeaways from you from this? What do you see as the headlines?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll have heard quite a lot of analysis around it being relatively clever politics. It is interesting that, you know, Labour is being quite maybe stingy with its spending, and National is willing to actually spend a bit more on in order to get tax cuts out to people. It's doing that through finding revenue in a number of interesting ways, some of which don't seem to entirely stack up. There's obviously been quite a lot of discussion around the foreign buyer tax, or the proposed tax on foreign buyers, and whether it breaches our trade agreements, whether the demand from foreign buyers would be there to raise the kind of revenue they're talking about.
Mm.
There's also plans to better regulate and tax online gambling done by overseas operators. But to my eyes, as someone who's covered a lot of that online territory in the past, basically they're planning to block access across all of New Zealand to any websites that don't participate, and that just sort of seems like a bit of a step too far from an online censorship perspective.
That's interesting. What is it that puts this in a different space than what we've seen from perhaps Labour? Because as you say, there's maybe this idea that National's being clever about its politics. And when you say that, what exactly do you mean? Is it the way they're framing it, or is it the policy itself?
I think it's a bit of both. It's the framing is certainly a key part of it. But, you know, the policy does give people more money each week than they would get under Labour, based on Labour's sort of GST and working for families changes. And I think we discussed the GST changes a couple of weeks ago, but those are only expected to save the average family $4 to $5 a week. National's policies are you know, not massive, but they're larger than that. They're also targeted at middle earners. So National got a lot of criticism for its proposals on adjusting tax brackets, because the more money you earn, the better the benefits. So they've just decided to limit that adjustment to the bottom three brackets. So actually anyone earning over 78,000 or so gets the same amount of money back, regardless of how much more than 78,000 they're earning. Someone who earns 200,000 gets the same as someone who earns 80,000. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of smart politics there. And realistically, the sort of sad truth for us in the media is that, for all of those criticisms that I've just talked about, most people aren't reading that far into the article. Most people aren't listening that much to political news. So what they'll hear is the headlines, which are broadly positive, and when National comes door knocking and they, you know, will have a QR code, you'll scan it, you'll put in your personal info, and it'll tell you how much money you get back. That's a really effective campaigning tool.
Speaking of, I guess, effective communication, what do you think about the way Labor's talked about their cost of living plan, they're calling it? It's a, you know, 10-step plan. There's a bunch of different avenues to it. A lot of them are getting a lot of praise for the, you know, material impact they might have on people's lives. Some are getting a little bit, I guess, less praise, perhaps not being super useful. But seen as a package, it doesn't look too bad. But are people seeing it as a package, Mark? That's, I guess, the question I have.
Yeah, I think that's the key question. I think probably the answer is no. You can see Labour and National have taken a very different approach to this. National announcing basically all of their sort of cost of living, you could say, response or what's in it for you policies on the same day last week, whereas Labour has sort of trotted it out and has a couple more to release over the course of the rest of the campaign. And in that 10-step plan, they're also including things that they've done well in government, like the free prescriptions from the budget. So it's not necessarily that there's 10 new things that you'll get when, if Labour is in a position to govern after the election. But yeah, I think you're right. It's hard to see the coherent message in all of that because it's been trotted out over multiple different announcements, so people will remember maybe individual bits of it but won't be fully conscious. You know, I couldn't list what the 10 are, or at least of the ones that have been released, and I'm someone who follows this quite closely, so I suspect the average voter, you know, they'll know a couple things. They'll know about dental, they'll probably know about the fruits and vegetables, but beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of dental, what do you make of Labor's free dental care for under 30s policy?
Well, I think that falls probably into a similar category as National's tax plan in terms of something that people will welcome, something where the details maybe aren't as exciting as the headline or as it's been portrayed. You know, that free dental care for under 30s, it doesn't cover everything, but it covers maybe most dental care for those under 30s. There's a question around whether the costs are sort of reliable. And that's the case also with National's tax policies, as we've discussed. And so, but, you know, realistically, how much do voters care about whether the costs add up? Really, what they'd like to know is what they get out of it. And from that perspective, that this is probably going to be welcomed. And even people who are over 30 will be looking at it from the perspective of, you know, we're one step closer to me getting free dental care. And that's something that they'd welcome.
Totally. Well, let's talk a wee bit about fringe parties now. Freedoms New Zealand, which is, I guess, one of these parties, there's a few of them that have come out of the, I guess, the wake of COVID. I've been putting them in big quote marks here, conspiracy sort of adjacent ideas or some perhaps more radical ideas. But they've been doing quite an interesting campaign of disrupting other people's meetings. Can you speak a wee bit about what's actually been going on and what's the goal of this?
Yeah, I think the goal is kind of twofold. Well, I'll talk about what's going on first. That's probably the more sensible way to order it. But yeah, basically, if they can figure out where Christopher Luxon or Chris Hipkins are going to be on a given day, they're trying to target those, you know, events, those campaign stops with protests, varying levels of maybe vocal or aggressive or disruptive. Both Labour and Nationals campaign launches on the weekend were attended by these protesters. And in Labour's case, I think a few more people showed up and sort of made it quite difficult to access the venue. And several of them also ended up inside the venue and would disrupt Chris Hipkins' speech and had to be let out by security. Earlier on in the campaign, you know, there was that scene last week where the Freedoms NZ candidate in, I think in Botany, popped his head over the fence during Christopher Luxon's press conference. Quite a few good memes out of that.
A lot of good memes out of that.
Definitely did disrupt the event. And the same guy a week or two before that had sort of, crashed Chris Hipkins' a campaign walk along somewhere in Auckland. Basically disrupting events, making it harder for the big parties to campaign. The reasoning there being one, trying to get attention for their party, definitely, but the other is that a lot of these groups, and particularly Freedoms NZ, have sort of spanned out of the parliament protests, the anti-mandate protests, the anti-lockdown protests, even going back to 2020 with people like Billy Takahika Jr., who isn't involved in Freedoms NZ, but some of the people who followed him then have moved on to Freedoms NZ.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think from that perspective, protest is sort of in their DNA. I think they find it much more exciting and thrilling to be spending their time protesting rather than door knocking. And it might be easier to motivate some of their supporters that way than by the traditional campaigning methods, but that doesn't mean that there's 5% in it.
Yeah, it's an interesting tactic for sure. It'll be interesting to see what comes for the rest of the campaign. As we said last time, it's still a long way away, the 14th of October. I'm thinking of the 15th because that's when it'll be done. But we'll be chatting to you again before then, Mark, to get some more great analysis. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kia ora.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.